In China, protests in big cities appear to have dwindled today, although Chinese citizens continue to vent online over months of COVID lockdowns. They're demanding change. NPR's Emily Feng is watching this closely from Taipei in Taiwan. Emily, hello.
Hello.
So I think we should start by reminding ourselves China is a giant place. Now, clarity is always a challenge, but it seems authorities are trying to clamp down on protests that began late last week. How are they trying to do that?
Right. These protests began on Saturday. They continued over the weekend. They basically popped up in every single major city. And the way that police are now trying to stop future protests is through quiet intimidation. They don't want to crack down too hard and create more motivation for people to go out. But what they can do is they can call people, ask them where they were the last couple of days, ask them if they plan on attending future, quote, illegal protests, and basically insinuate that they're in a world of pain if they decide to foment any more kind of dissent. They've been apparently triaging phone signals based on who showed up around various times in particular sites across the country, and then calling people to intimidate them.
By phone signals, do you mean they are getting information from the wireless carriers and trying to track people down that way based on where their phones have been?
Yes. And we know that people in China use this for public health tracking purposes for COVID. So if cases pop up, they can go back to cell phone towers and see whose signal was roughly in that vicinity in that rough time period. Of course, this can be very, very inaccurate. You can wrap up a lot of other people's phone signals, even if they were just passing through, if they didn't spend that much time there. And you'll also miss a lot of people, but they've managed to track down a lot of people who were briefly at the protests based on these Telegram groups that I'm in of people who went to the Beijing protests, for example, over the weekend.
You've spent many years in China, Emily. You've seen protests. Does this feel different?
It does, because it happened in so many cities at the same time. I've seen protests before, and there have been acts of dissent, even in the last couple of weeks. But to see something like this happen at a relatively large scale, you know, 500, 1,000 people at once, and then in multiple cities across the country, that feels unprecedented. And it feels extraordinary because there is so much online censorship.
Speaking of censorship, on Chinese social media, there is always a cat and mouse game between people online and the Chinese authorities trying to clamp down. Chinese nationals are very creative in getting around this, speaking in code on social media. What have you seen as far as people being able to continue their conversations?
When people were organizing these protests or trying to find sites to go demonstrate at, they would often say, where are people going for a walk, rather than mention the word protest, because that could be sensitive. When people showed up at these protests, they often were holding blank A4 sheets of paper, which has already led to this moniker for the series of demonstrations this weekend as China's A4 revolution. And these blank sheets of paper were both to protect protesters, so if they were caught, they could say, I was just holding a blank sheet of paper, but they also illustrated the kind of mute protests that people have towards the policing and censorship they live under in China. I saw some signs at universities where people had written, and I'm not a math person, but they had written equations that physics majors later told me was something equivalent to the Friedman's algorithm. Friedman sounding like the word free man, free, people protesting for freedom and liberty. So there were all these creative ways that people could have plausible deniability while still showing that they were unhappy with the situation.
Yeah. Wow. Emily, what has been the public messaging from state media? And I've seen some blaming by central government officials, blaming local authorities for being too strict with COVID lockdowns. It almost seems a potential sign that the strict COVID rules might loosen, at least coming from Beijing.
So far, they've finessed some of the rules, but the overall direction of zero COVID has not changed. And state media has made no mention whatsoever that these demonstrations even happened. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson did blame the protests over the weekend on what he said were forces with ulterior motives. But official media did not pick up his statements. If you go onto the Foreign Ministry website, those comments are deleted from the official transcript. But basically, if officials mention the protests at all, what they do is they blame the demonstrations on hostile foreign forces.
Finally, Emily, what are you looking for in the next couple days?
I'm wondering if there are more protests. Right now, it's very quiet, and certainly it looks like police have been able to scare people enough to stay at home. But as I mentioned, the zero COVID policies have not changed. The Politburo, which is the highest level of the Chinese Communist Party, they held a meeting today where they alluded to the fact that national security and stability was their number one priority right now, and they had to work hard to make sure that mass incidents didn't happen. This, of course, is a reference to the demonstrations without explicitly naming them. So there's already a tension that's been set up about whether or not people will continue to go out next week because the issues they've been protesting about haven't changed. Mm-hmm. But central authorities are very much preparing for that in case it happens and are ready to crack down immediately.
NPR's Emily Feng, thanks for the time.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay, let's ask a larger global question here. With China catching COVID, does the world economy start ailing too? What does this mean for Chinese factory output, for Chinese purchases of, say, American cars and luxury goods? We have Robin Farzad on the line for these questions. He's host of Public Radio's Full Disclosure. Robin, hi again.
Hello again.
Okay, can I throw some numbers at you?
Please.
Chinese domestic flights are down by half compared to last year. Subway traffic down 32%. COVID cases in China more than double 2 weeks ago. How concerning is this to the world economy, which is already dealing with inflation and high interest rates?
Anybody who speaks as a global citizen is clearly worried about it. You want a rising tide to lift all boats. Privately, though, traders kind of, they celebrate the fact that, for example, you'll see a drop in demand of oil, perhaps the biggest Chinese oil demand drop in over three decades, as you see factories idled, as you see fewer people driving, fewer deliveries made. The COVID lockdown has caused a dent in coal consumption, natural gas consumption, hogs. I mean, you've seen the prices on the commodities exchanges in the United States, and that's always been the kind of the double-edged thing with China. Everybody seems to celebrate how much the economy has grown since its ascension to the World Trade Organization nearly 20 years ago, mm-hmm. but it also has put a huge, huge drain on global commodities, and it's inflationary. And in a period of inflation right now, you kind of privately celebrate if the Chinese are easing off demand.
Yeah, right. This is when we need the two hands of an economist to talk. On the one hand,
oil
prices
right.
might go down, right? Our gas prices might go down. On the other hand, if it stays, these COVID rules stay strict and, you know, Chinese people can't move around the way they used to, is there a concern of recession in China?
And that's the question. They've been so good at avoiding recession in the modern period. I mean, you and I probably remember the rolling emerging market crises, the various crises in Asia, Malaysia, Indonesia,
that 97,
happened in
98.
The late... In 97, 98, and that actually helped send, I mean, everybody experienced it, Latin America, Russia, but China mm-hmm. was strong. China was banking so many hundreds of billions of dollars back then and buying treasuries, and it's been really adept. You know, one stat that blows my mind here, Bill Gates once tweeted that just in 2 years following, you know, part of the Great Recession here, 2011 to 2013, China used more cement than the United States used in the entire 20th century. They can throw all sorts of raw materials at the problem. They can build high-speed rail. They have very deep pockets. The question is, how much can you do when you're also trying to lock down an economy and arrest the spread of COVID? You can't really have it both ways.
And that's one of the questions inside China. Chinese authorities, the central bank, they're trying to throw money at borrowers, property developers. But it seems there's only so much they can do, right? If there's still a broad lockdown in the big, big cities, which are the big economic engines.
And to bring it back to unrest, I think, you know, some people realize that after the Tiananmen crackdown, I think the implicit arrangement that Beijing made with the people is don't touch the third rail of politics, but you can become rich in this country. Indeed, China has lifted 800 million people out of poverty since just 1982. And if you just look at its trade balance since the mid-90s, you're talking, you know, $300-400 billion. Now you're well in excess of $4 trillion. I mean, this has been a miraculous economy. It's never truly had a hard landing. And you've never really tested the Chinese government if all of these factories are idled, if suddenly iPhones are not being produced, if hogs mm-hmm. are not making it to people, if the countryside gets restive. It has not had a hard landing in the modern period.
You heard it here. It has not had a hard landing in a while. We'll see what happens next. Robin Farzad, host of Public Radio's Full Disclosure. Robin, thanks as always.
My pleasure. Thank you.